You want to go on a bike ride with me? In his book, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, Robert Fulghum writes, "All I really need to know about how to live and what to do and how to be, I learned in kindergarten. Wisdom was not at the top of the graduate school mountain, but there in the sand pile at Sunday school." Like Fulghum, I too learned some very important things in kindergarten. And I would add that my life learning has continued in a profound way on the seat of a bicycle. Doug and I started bicycling in 2001 on a tandem, that's a bicycle built for two, up and down the Pennsylvania hills. Among biking friends who love bike touring and helped us come to love it too. 15 years later, biking continues to be an important part of both of our lives, although some things have changed. These days, we spend a lot more time on single bikes than on the tandem. Why do I keep it up? And here, I can't speak for Doug. I will speak for myself. Why do I keep it up? I like how biking keeps me physically fit. I like how it connects me with nature. I like how it helps me release stress. I like how it reduces my carbon footprint. And I like biking with Doug. It is something that we really enjoy doing together. But even beyond that, I keep on biking because it has, in a strange way, turned into a spiritual practice for me. A practice that fully engages my mind and my body and my spirit. You could put it like this. Biking helps me do the deep inner work that I need to be doing. In the language of the Apostle Paul, it helps me work out my salvation, sometimes with much fear and much trembling. The fear and trembling comes as biking brings me face to face with some parts of myself that I'd like to pretend aren't there. Let me introduce you to one of them. Its name is pride. And I begin here with a confession. Truth be told, when I am biking with a group, I'd rather be at the front of the pack. I hate getting left in the dust, which happens more often than I'd like, because although I am a pretty strong rider, I am not a particularly fast rider. And when I find myself trailing behind, my pride doesn't like it. And I can get bent out of shape. And sometimes it isn't pretty. The gift, although it sometimes feels like a curse of biking, is that it gives me opportunity, lots of opportunity, to name pride when it shows up. To offer it some compassion, to anoint it with enough humor and playfulness so that it can slide off and I can get back to enjoying the ride. A second area of inner work that meets me on the bicycle is awareness of my vulnerability. There is nothing like a multi-day, self-contained bike trip to remind you that you are truly at the mercy of forces beyond you. In biking, as in all of life, we are vulnerable. As I prepare for an extended bike tour, I am aware that we may face bad weather, severe storms, intense heat, or a steady downpour in 40-degree weather that lasts all day. Not a whole lot of fun. When you're touring, you need to be ready for just about anything. And that includes mechanical breakdowns. We've learned that it pays to have the bike thoroughly looked over by a mechanic before we leave on a long trip. We learned the hard way. Of course, we always travel with spare inner tubes, a pump, Allen wrenches, electrician's tape, and some other basic tools. But how do you prepare for a seat post or handlebars that snap right off the bike when you're out in the middle of nowhere? Yes, it has happened. And Doug can fill you in on the details because it always happens to him. What do you do in a situation like that? Well, first you dig deep into your own resources. You get out your tools, and when all else fails, there's always electrician's tape. You call on your problem-solving imagination and skills. And you also pull out your humor, especially when things start getting tense. It's better than bad words. However, some issues are bigger than your resources. In the case of the broken seat posts, not even electrical tape can take care of the problem. Not even duct tape. That's when you realize just how vulnerable you are, wading along the side of a road, out in the middle of nowhere, with not a lot of good options about what to do next. And then, out of necessity, you open yourself to Providence, which often shows up as a stranger passing by. In the case of the broken seat post, a woman stopped by in a van, out in the middle of nowhere, and asked if we needed help. We did. She called her husband, who immediately came by with his truck and picked us up and took us to their house. The man in the truck drove Doug all over creation, trying to find the parts that we needed to get us back on the road. Parts were found. The bike was fixed. And because a severe storm was on the way, this couple invited us to stay the night with them at their home. We declined. We had places that we needed to get to by that night. But we carried their generous hospitality. We carried their generous hearts with us for the rest of our trip and beyond. And this experience, along with others like it, and I could tell you other stories like it, have helped me learn to trust that in the midst of vulnerable space that we all find ourselves in from time to time, there will be provision. As provision comes to us through those we meet along the way and through those we ride with, biking reminds me of my need for community, and it invites me to take responsibility for my place in it. I've discovered that a bicycling community can look much like a church community. We help each other face challenges. In the face of stiff headwinds, we create slipstreams for each other. When the hills are interminable, we either climb them together or we wait for each other at the top. We share sustenance with each other. We share our water when the bottles are getting empty, and on long, dry stretches, we sometimes carry extra water for each other. And we share our food. One of my memories from one of our trips felt a lot like communion, standing alongside the road, passing around dried apricots so that we might together find the energy that we needed to ride the 10 last miles of a 108-mile day trip. We look out after each other. At intersections, when the route turns, someone commits to waiting there until the last person is through to make sure that no one gets lost and no one gets left behind. We help each other see. We call out hazards to each other along the way that others may or may not be aware of. You will hear in our biking community somebody yelling out, "Gravel!" to warn us of loose gravel. "Bump! Car up!" That means there's a car coming. Car back. A car coming behind us. And we have opportunity to practice saying, I'm sorry. When we take off after a rest stop before someone's ready to go, or when fatigue gives way to snappiness, or when careless riding causes difficulty or danger to others. Mostly, biking in community gives us the opportunity to be real with each other. You know, it's hard to hide a lot in spandex. And there is something about sweat and grit and helmet hair that strips away pretense and helps us be at home with ourselves and each other just as we are. Perhaps some of my own most significant inner work has happened through hill climbing. Hills have provided me with opportunity to build physical, mental, and spiritual muscles that help me lean into challenges when the going gets tough. Last summer was sort of a momentous summer for me. I made the decision to go on 2 group bike trips. These were extended tours on my single bicycle. These were not trips through the flatlands of Indiana. These were rigorous trips through mountainous terrain. Now, I had done trips like these before, but always on the back seat of a tandem. I didn't know if I could do it on my single, but it felt important to find out if I could. Looking back, I'm pretty sure I was needing to practice with my body what I was working with in my spirit. In my spirit, I was climbing some steep hills, and I needed to work it out in my body. So, I spent a summer climbing hills. The beginning of the summer found me in Virginia, climbing the short, steep, relentless hills of the Shenandoah Valley and the long, and by long I mean miles long, steady climbs of Skyline Drive. The end of the summer found me climbing long and ridiculously steep hills in Quebec, and they were ridiculously steep. In the months in between, I was climbing the more manageable hills around Bristol. Now, Doug's mantra, one of Doug's many mantras, has been, hills are our friends. I wish I could say that were true for me, that hills are my friends, but they're not. And I'm coming to the conclusion that they probably never will be. But I can say that I am deeply appreciative of what I am learning from the discipline of climbing them. First, I am learning that hills are not meant to be conquered. They are meant to be respected, to be listened to, and to be climbed at the pace that they want to be climbed. Sometimes this involves more patience than pain. It can take an hour to climb a hill that is 6 miles long. It took me an hour to climb a hill that was 6 miles long. And so, as I bike these kind of long, steady hills, I learn about patience. As patience grows thin, I am learning to sing my way up. It's the, come bike with us, the journey is long. Come bike with us, the journey is long. That got me up many hills on Skyline Drive. Sometimes I pray the Psalms. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where will my help come? Oh, I sure hope it comes soon. Sometimes I remind myself to simply be aware of what is around me. Smell the honeysuckle. Watch the butterflies lighting on wildflowers. Listen for birdsong and rushing streams. Keep on a lookout for bears and eagles and deer. Savor the gorgeous outlooks. You're going slow enough. You might as well just take it all in. As I climb, I've also begun the practice of remembering and praying for others who are climbing their own hills of loss, of illness, of broken relationship. I climb in solidarity with them. And sometimes I even have the presence of mind to give thanks, mostly to the hills, for growing my muscles, for slowing me down, for helping me feel my limits, for teaching me how to climb. I will also say that it often takes more than patience to get to the top of the hill. Often it takes lots of hard physical work and focused mental energy. When I encounter this kind of hill, I have a different kind of approach. I practice not focusing towards the top of the hill. Maybe I'll take one first glance to see where I'm going, but after that, my focus needs to go elsewhere. Because I can get easily overwhelmed, especially when the hill seems outrageously steep or there just is no end in sight. My eyes need to focus just a few feet in front of me. And my energy needs to focus on nothing more than each pedal stroke, trusting that one pedal stroke at a time, I will make it to the top. I also practice relaxing. And I mean, I practice because it doesn't come naturally. When I face a hill, my natural tendency is to tense up, to tighten up. But I'm learning to notice that and to respond consciously by just relaxing my upper body and gently leaning into the hill and freeing up all my energy for my legs. I try to get out of the way and let my legs do the work that they know how to do. Of course, when all else fails, I can always begin counting. I distract myself by counting from 1 to 10 in every language that I know, and I keep it up as long as it takes. Perhaps most importantly, I've learned that there is more than one way to climb a hill. And one of those ways is by getting off your bike and pushing it to the top. During this past summer of 1,000 hills, I walked up 2. And it was a little hard on my pride, truth be told. But you know, I survived. My pride survived. And it helped me know again, deep in my core, that in the end, it isn't about getting there first. And it isn't even about not getting there last. It's not about whether you can make it to the top without getting off and pushing your bike or stopping to sit in the ditch to rest. For me, I am learning that it is about listening to and honoring my body. Savoring the scenery, the sights, the sounds, the smells. Plugging away at the hills, one pedal stroke at a time. and allowing myself to be exhilarated as I crest the top and sail down the other side. Never mind that what goes down will soon go up. Most of all, this journey with my bike has actually been about working out my salvation, often with fear and trembling. It sounds a little heretical, I know. The truth is, whatever we think salvation is, we can't earn it. It's a gift. But maybe, just maybe, we can work it out. Not by gritting our teeth and working hard at it, but by taking a deep breath and opening ourselves to it. Opening ourselves to the guiding and grounding presence of our faithful traveling companion, who goes with us and undergirds us with love, always, always, whether we're aware of it or not. In the company of this faithful one, we learn to trust that on this journey, there is no failure. There is no condemnation. There is only love. Do we dare open ourselves to this salvation? Do we dare trust in this love? In closing, I'd like to offer a prayer that I wrote in my journal as we began our mountainous trips last summer. There are no fancy words here, just a heartfelt prayer, and I hope that you can also hear it as your own. Will you pray with me? God, I want to stay grounded on this journey. I want to keep my sense of humor and my sense of playfulness, even more than I want to make it up the hills without walking. As I climb the hills, I want to remember friends at home who are climbing steep and long hills of their own. Help me remember, loving spirit, that my value is not dependent on how fast or competently or strongly I ride, or if I even finish. I am held and loved by you, and nothing will ever change that. We are held and loved by you, and nothing can or will ever change that. Amen.